Did the Bible have anything to do with the Declaration of Independence, our nation's birth certificate? The Declaration mentions God four times. One of those references is to the Supreme Judge of the world. Some scholars note that this is a reference to Jesus Christ, since the founders recognized the biblical truth from John chapter 5 that Jesus will be the judge of the world. You can also see that in Matthew 25. Judge Darrell White is the founder of Retired Judges of America, and he's a semi-retired judge. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Focal Point, and we welcome back Judge Darrell White to talk about the Bible and the Declaration of Independence. Judge, it's always a good pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, I would say the same, Jerry. I'm a big admirer of yours, and your mentor, D. James Kennedy, who was one of my heroes of faith.
Oh, well, that's excellent. Okay, so, and he's the ultimate founder of this radio station. Now, I think it's absolutely fair to say that the Declaration of Independence, which is our nation's birth certificate, it is our founding document. Would you agree that, in effect, what you have in the Declaration, it's all premised on some theological key points that are really critical to the whole argument and flow in the document?
Well, Martin Luther King said that America was founded on an idea. And you may be familiar with some of the powerful quotes that are attributed to Martin Luther King concerning the Declaration of Independence. And I want to say G.K. Chesterton had a powerful quote about the Declaration or America being founded on a creed, and that creed being wrapped up in the Declaration of Independence. We do well to recapture that idea, especially since the Declaration of Independence is America's foremost organic law. Now, a lot of people will be unfamiliar with that term, but if you pull the next time you're in a law office, pull the United States Code off the shelf, if there happens to be a bound set of those books, they number several hundred, and it's the titles of the United States Code, the federal statutes. But if you pull volume one off the shelf, it starts off with America's organic laws. And those are, serially, in order, the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation that governed us for a dozen years, and said, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged in the United States. The Northwest Ordinance, actually that language I just quoted was in the Northwest Ordinance that provided for statehood for a number of years.
By the way, let me just interrupt you real fast. Think about the significance of what you just read with the Northwest Ordinance. That was in reference to, okay, as new territories would become new states. Okay, so territories would become new states. They would essentially follow the same template as described in this Northwest Ordinance, which, by the way, if you don't mind, I'll just throw this in, was adopted in 1787 and then readopted in, say, in 1789 to fit under the Constitution. Same words. And here's the bottom line. They were saying that when schools take, you know, are created, and they should be, we'll encourage them forever. What's to be taught there? Religion, morality, and knowledge. Oh, and today, the Bible has no place in the public school, and yet the founders said that's the first principle. But I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, we have been warned, taking that theme a little farther, we have been warned by a number of sources, but one key one is pointed out in a book called None Dare Call It Education by John Stormer, when he quoted from the Elementary Textbook Evaluation Guide published in 1961 by the Textbook Study League Incorporated of San Gabriel, California. Listen to this warning. Withhold from the children for one generation the truth of rights endowed by the Creator. That's straight out of the Declaration. And our Constitution could be altered, and our freedom could be voted away without the citizens ever knowing the cause of their slavery. It's spiritual slavery, Jerry. And if we continue to withhold the reality that the Creator and the acknowledgement of the Creator is America's philosophy of government, it's not an unconstitutional establishment of religion. It's our philosophy of government. Otherwise, how could it be so that every federal judge since the very beginning has been required to take an oath that ends, "So help me God"? That's not optional. That's in the judicial oath. It was Section 8 of the Judiciary Act of 1789, and it's embedded in 28 U.S. Code Section 453 to this day. And it's a requirement. And how can you reconcile that with Article 6 of the Constitution, framed by some of the same men, that says no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to hold office or public trust under the United States? The only way you can reconcile those two statements is to understand that the acknowledgement of God is America's philosophy of government. It's just that simple.
Okay, so going back to our kind of our top story here, the what you call the what? The organic code, the organic law?
Organic laws. Organic laws.
Okay, organic laws. And there's four main documents in them or that comprise them. And again, to recap this, they are the Declaration, the Northwest Ordinance, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution. And if I were to do it the right way, I would have put the Articles of Confederation first before the Northwest Ordinance. Okay, so we have about half of this discussion is actually, you know, over. So let's, as we look to the next half of this discussion, why don't we just take the time to have you explain some of the references to God in the Declaration of Independence and what are their significance, again, as we talk about the Bible and the Declaration.
Jerry, I have a standing offer to my children and grandchildren of two. It was $100 some years ago, and only one son took me up on that. And I've had a grandson do it as well. But the standing offer has been raised to $200 if they will memorize the Declaration of Independence. So they don't have to memorize the 27 specifications of error, the grievances, but to memorize the other parts of the Declaration of Independence, which I have done. Is a powerful affirmation of what America is all about. And so the laws of nature and nature's God are mentioned in the Declaration. The Creator is acknowledged in the Declaration. As you mentioned, the protection of divine providence is in the conclusion of the Declaration, and the supreme judge of the world is there as well. So that's the four references in our Declaration that Jefferson's very last letter, listen to how powerful this is. May the Declaration of Independence be to the world the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves, and to assume the blessings and security of self-government. That form which we have substituted restores the free rights to the unbounded exercise of reason and the freedom of opinion. All eyes are opening to the rights of man. Now, that was Thomas Jefferson's last letter, and you may know that he died the very same day in 1826, July 4th, as did John Adams, which was taught powerfully as a reminder of God's providential watch over America to earlier generations. And Jefferson, maybe I made this point, he signed his correspondence. Washington and Adams ended their presidential papers in the year of our Lord. D. James Kennedy points out that Jefferson concluded many of his presidential papers in the year of our Lord Christ. And so there's a clear trend to the acknowledgement of God in the founding of this country. And if we want God's blessing, we need to recognize whence it comes.
Daryl, what would you say to those who would say, okay, there's a reference to deity in the Declaration of Independence, but that's not the same as the biblical God?
Well, look at their papers. Look at their correspondence. Look at the references to the biblical God is what I would say, and to Jesus Christ.
Well, let me say this too, since I co-wrote a book with Mark Belials called Doubting Thomas. I don't know if I ever sent you a copy, but
I'd love a copy.
Oh, okay, sure, okay. Anyway, the Jefferson's faith or the lack thereof is a nuanced picture, but the bottom line is that Jefferson was not a lifelong skeptic by any means. Later, he did have some questions about the Trinity and some core Christian doctrines in some private correspondence and so forth. Mark Belials, my co-author of Doubting Thomas, even says, you know, the interesting thing about a lot of those doubts and so forth, they were in letters that he didn't even send. So in other words, it was like a copy that he had saved of a letter that he did not send, which is interesting. You know, maybe it was like he wasn't willing to even put this out on paper to the world. But bottom line is here, 1777, so a year after he wrote the Declaration of Independence, the same year he wrote the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which said that the holy author of our religion, meaning Jesus, is the reason we should have religious freedom, because to force people against their will to believe something they don't believe in is not the way Jesus did it, and we shouldn't do it either. And that's the gist of it. I'm summarizing what he said, but that's very faithful to what he says in that document. So in 1777, he, as a layman, was the key lay person founder of an evangelical church, which called the Reverend Charles Clay, who was an evangelical ordained in the Anglican tradition, which made him a very, made him a minority, quite frankly, Charles Clay. And, this church was called the Calvinistical Reformed Church of Charlottesville. It met in the local courthouse, and we have in the book two of the sermons never before printed ever of Charles Clay, and they're straightforward gospel preaching. So did Jefferson later entertain some doubts, later in life? Yes, he did. And but that doesn't take away the fact that when he was so useful to the country, by all outward appearances, he was a professing, believing Christian. So we have about 1 minute left. Whatever else you want to say at the Bible and the Declaration, I'd appreciate it. Daryl White.
Well, let me mention someone else who was an important figure during that time frame, and that's Chief Justice John Marshall, who there was some antipathy between him and Jefferson, but Marshall's daughter makes the point that it was only as an old gentleman that the Chief Justice came to faith in the deity of Jesus Christ, and that only after he read a particular book. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it dealt with the prophecies associated with Jesus Christ. And he was seen thereafter frequently at church. He was a big, gangly, tall fella, His daughter talked about him kneeling in church.
All right, we are out of time. AJAtoday.com, Judge Daryl White. I'll tell you what, we're going to have Judge Daryl White on again to talk more on Vocal Point in a future edition.